Hi, I'm Andy Reid.
And I'm Mike Porter.
You're listening to Catskill Cabin Conversation, which is aired on the third Tuesday now of each month from 2 until 3 p.m. in WGXC Acre 90.7 FM.
On each show, invited guests will be asked to discuss a number of items that they intend taking with them on their Catskill Cabin getaway. As we discuss their chosen items, it is hoped that you, the listener, will enjoy getting to know that person a little bit better.
Today's guest is Josh Fromer. Josh considers himself to be a bit of a polymath. He graduated from Green County College in 2006. His primary employer is a well-known auto parts company in Tannersville, New York. He is also a member of the board of directors for the Hunter Foundation. And the Hunter Foundation is a local organisation that is known primarily for restoring buildings in the town of Hunter and surrounding areas and leasing them to prospective and aspiring business owners. During the winter months, Josh coaches snowboarding on behalf of the local high school. Josh, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, guys. Great to be here.
What did you study at the college?
Oh, at Green Mountain College, a little hippie school in Pulteney, Vermont. I actually studied history with a minor in economics.
History with a minor in economics.
Yeah, with my real major was partying a lot. That's really what I did.
Now, did you say Pulteney?
Pulteney, Vermont, yeah.
My friend is visiting from Wales, and he has just come back from Pulteney, New York, because there's a huge contingency of Welsh ancestry there.
That's so interesting.
It's slate mining.
No kidding.
Yes, and we actually have a sister school in Wales that we're able to do a exchange program with through the college that I had an opportunity to do. And I didn't, because I thought at that point in my life at 19 years old that I'd have plenty of opportunities to spend months at a time in Europe during my life. And yeah, I kind of regret that. I didn't do that. But.
Do you know where in Wales the college
I wish
was?
I could pronounce it. Aberystwyth?
Aberystwyth.
Yes, that's right. Right. Yeah, sounds much better in your accent than mine.
And even then, my friend John will probably scold me for my lack of appropriate pronunciation. But that's interesting. I didn't realize that that's where the college was.
Yeah, and it has a great Welsh heritage. Actually, I played rugby there. And our flag for the rugby team that we used to march out with was the Welsh flag.
Cool.
For Wales.
It's a cool flag.
It is.
The dragon.
Yeah, red dragon or
green
or
and white background.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, hooray for the Welsh.
Yeah.
Yeah, so my friend John's from, I've actually visited North Wales quite a lot. I've been in Cardiff as well, in South Wales. But I've been in North Wales about four or five times. Actually, for my 30th birthday, I went down a mine.
Oh.
We went into the bowels of this mine for my 30th birthday. And it was really, really interesting. You know, I could hear the little train click, 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 click all the way down.
Oh,
I was like,
go deeper and deeper.
Like, please don't snap.
I read for a grad class on the Great Depression a book called Road to Wagon Pier.
Wagon Pier?
Wagon Pier, yeah. And it was about this coal mining town and the struggles that the people faced. And incredible stories about these coal miners and how they would go, you know, a mile or something deep into the ground. Mm-hmm. And then they would have to run upwards of 7 miles to the face of the mine to start mining coal. Mm-hmm. And they were paid according to the amount of coal they dug out.
Yeah.
So they go to work, not getting paid, ride down the elevator to the shaft, not getting paid, run 7 miles underground, not getting paid. Sometimes they'd get there and the vein would have run out. And they wouldn't have located another, so they'd have to run back. And these guys, the shafts were short. They were only like 3 or 4 feet high for safety. And just,
yeah.
So they would be running bent over the whole way, and, you know, a mile underground in the heat. And they got the nickname buttonbacks because as they were running, you know, your legs are, they've got to be burning like crazy. You get tired. And occasionally they would stand up a little bit and skin their backs, their naked backs on the ceiling.
Wow.
And skin every... wherever the skin was on their spine sticking up, and so that it created these like kind of scabs, these buttons,
kind of like what do you call those hard skin,
like a callus,
calluses.
Yeah. So it just unbelievably tough people.
Yeah, you know, the throughout Britain, coal mining was a huge industry, and that was brought to a shuddering halt by the lovely Maggie Thatcher, you know.
Because she privatized them.
Yeah, well, she her aim was to close a lot of them down and you know, obtain coal from other countries. And therefore, a lot of these Welsh, particularly the Welsh and Yorkshire mines that were closed, a lot of these little towns died.
Yeah.
You know? And there was a lot of, attached to a lot of these coal mines in Wales, there was a lot of brass bands.
Yeah.
And they'd have like brass band competitions and sure. all that. It was taken very, very seriously. So when all that, when the mines went, all these brass bands and tradition went down the tubes as well, you know. Now, your first song is, do you want to bring it in, Josh? Tell us what your first song
is.
Oh,
man. So my first song is Back in the High Life by Steve Winwood.
Yep.
I'm a big Steve Winwood fan.
So what particularly about this song do you like?
Oh, you know what I like about it? And it's so funny because it actually, Steve Winwood wrote it, and it was kind of biographical for him because he was somebody who had a lot of success early in his life.
Yeah.
And then disappeared for a while and then came back. And I kind of like that song because it's a message about redemption. It's a message that every low time could be rewarded with a high time. And I find it kind of inspirational. And I think everybody, myself not excluded from this, has had those low times in life. And you always kind of think to yourself, you know, someday I'm going to be back in the high life. I'm not going to be in this part of town forever.
Yeah.
And I just like the message of the song, and I find it kind of motivating.
That was Stephen Lawrence, Steve Winwood. Good choice.
Yeah, I love that song.
Now, you were talking about, well, we're listening to the song now, you were talking about your experience of seeing him in Hunter.
Yeah, I saw him at Hunter Mountain back in 2012. He headlined Mountain Jam, which is the yearly music festival they have down there. And it was funny because the only one of his real hit solo songs he played was Higher Love, which is a fantastic song. But he played a lot of his older stuff from Traffic and all that. And it was awesome because I think the guy's pushing like 70 years old. Yeah. And he still has a booming clear voice. And he just engaged the crowd. And he played the piano. He played the guitar. He just, it was a great performance. And as somebody, it turned me from a casual fan to a fan.
Yeah. Years and years ago, he based his singing on the influence of Ray Charles.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people in his early formative singing days said he sounded kind of Ray Charles-ish.
Yeah.
You were talking off mic when you were talking about how long he's been around.
Yeah.
And I was reading some stuff about him. And it says that once, while he was a student, and I don't mean a student in a higher college, I mean in school, maybe 14, 15 years old, he was part of the Birmingham rhythm and blues scene in England, and played the Hammond B organ, the guitar, and did backing vocals for singers such as Muddy Waters, John Lee Hooker, T-Bone Walker, Howlin' Wolf, B.B. King, Sonny Boy Williams, and Eddie Boyd, Otis Spann, Chuck Berry, and Bo Diddley. Now, when these guys did their UK tours, they came just with themselves or right. just a few musicians, and they relied on backing pickup bands, and he was part of that band. Now, can you imagine at 14 years old playing with all these guys?
Unbelievable. That's quite the resume.
Yeah, I mean, unbelievable, yeah. You know? So, well, great choice.
Thanks.
I really like that song. So.
Excellent.
Fantastic. Now, your first item that you're taking with you is your, is it 0.308?
Oh, it's so 308. You just say 308.
Yep. See, I'm just so not a hunter.
Yeah,
a 308 Remington hunting rifle.
Yeah, it's.
Tell us about it.
Sure, it's funny because you probably hear that I'd be going to a cabin in the woods and I'd be bringing a hunting rifle. It'd be for the purpose of hunting, but I don't hunt. And I don't think I ever will. But it was given to me by my great-grandfather shortly before he passed away. And he was an avid hunter, an avid outdoorsman. And he was somebody who, when I think about what he was in my life, it wasn't about what he did, it was how he lived his own life. And he was just very carefree. Nothing bothered him. He led by example. And to just have this gun of his is just a tremendous, it's probably one of my most treasured possessions, and it's something I always keep. So if I had to go someplace for a long time and be by myself, I would like to have it with me.
Just in case.
Yeah, I do shoot it occasionally.
just in case you get there and there's a noise and you...
Yeah.
Someone turns up at the camp and you shouldn't be there.
Absolutely. I still have it in my house. I still have a box of ammo with it. And, you know, it's funny because my great-grandfather actually didn't like the gun. He didn't have good luck with it hunting.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's good for protection to have one of these things just
absolutely.
In case, because there's a lot of animals that could cause some problems for mm-hmm. you. However, when I was reading this stuff on this gun, it did stress in the final paragraph, this gun is unsuitable for use on the three big bears, polar, brown, and grizzly, and on other dangerous game.
Yeah, you need like a rocket-propelled grenade for
yeah.
those.
Yeah, in a self-defense situation requiring stopper power or dangerous game at close range, use a larger and heavier caliber is strongly advised.
Yes.
So, yeah.
You know, grizzly bears, high-powered rounds will bounce off of their skulls, like ricochet off, I've heard.
Wow.
Isn't that insane?
Well, they are wearing helmets.
Grizzly bears?
Yeah.
Smarter than the average bear? Hey, boo-boo, you got your helmet today?
Ah, dear. Oh. Dear. All right. Next song, Josh.
Oh, this song actually has a real story to it. and Audible Melodies by Jack Johnson.
All right. Tell us a story.
Yeah. So a lot of people probably haven't heard of Jack Johnson, but this is off an album called Brushfire Fairy Tales that I discovered way back in freshman year at Green Mountain College back in 2002. My roommate and I discovered it together. And about 2 or 3 days before Thanksgiving break, we sat in our room, in our dorm room, and we listened to this entire album on repeat all day. And it was his birthday, and his then new girlfriend would occasionally come in the room periodically throughout the day to check on us, and she'd be like, "Are you guys still listening to this song, this album?" "Yeah, we are. We love this album. It's amazing." And it was so funny sitting there being witness to this, because it was really seeing young love between those two. Uh-huh. And they ended up getting married. And I just had dinner with them 2 nights ago, them and their 2-year-old or 1-year-old daughter. And it's funny, 14 years later, and we still will have dinner together.
Yeah.
And he'll say, "Hey, let me put on some music." And he'll put on Jack Johnson.
Nice.
And Inaudible Melodies is the first song off that album. So whenever the album would repeat, that song would play and be like, "We're listening to it again, aren't we?" "Yes, we are."
Yeah.
And I think the whole album's like 45 minutes long, so you can picture some boys in a room for about 12 hours.
So kind of a reminiscing of a time gone by.
Yeah.
And that's a sweet song, a sweet story, I have to say. The guy just all of a sudden came out of nowhere, if mm-hmm. I remember right. It was just, you know, and it was one of those kind of mellow, cool albums.
Yeah.
The guy's a songwriter, musician, actor, record producer, documentary, filmmaker, and a former professional surfer.
Yes.
Which he had to give up because he had a surfing accident. And when he was a young lad, and had to give it up. But his father was a professional surfer. But one of the main things that he does in his life is he gives a lot to charity. He's created a couple of charitable foundations and gives a lot of money. Gave like 50 grand to like Hurricane Sandy and stuff like that. Mm. So he does like concerts, gives money away. And he's a big conservationist.
He's environmentalist.
He's into everything green, you know.
Right.
So he has a recording company, and they use solar power at the studio, recyclable CD packaging, power-saving air conditioners. Yeah.
So it sounds like an altogether sound bloke.
Yeah, he's a cool guy.
Dust off your thinking caps, solar powered plastic plants, pretty pictures of things we ate. We're only what we hate. But in the long run, we have found silent films are full of sound, inaudibly free.
demanding refunds for the things they've seen. I wish they could believe in all the things and never made the screen. And just slow down, everyone, you're moving too fast. Frames can't get you when you're moving like that. Slow down, everyone, you're moving too fast. Frames can't get you when you're moving like that. Moving too.
You're listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXE Acre 90.7 FM. Just a reminder that if you enjoy listening to the radio station, please go online and make a donation if you can, at any point, however small or big, in order to keep this fabulous radio station running. We would really appreciate it. Thank you. That was Jack Johnson. You're listening to Josh Frommer talk about his favourite songs and favourite items on the show. We were talking while we were listening to that, Josh, that you were saying that that song just takes you right back to that point where your mate and just writing a paper. Remember what paper you were writing?
No, you know, it was for Pat Moore's some early American history class. It was probably a paper that was being terribly written by me for a very strict teacher that I think wasn't a fan of men. At least that was how I justified the poor grade she gave me. But it was just, he was working on an astronomy project and he was incredibly studious, focused individual. He's a orthopedic surgeon, physician's assistant now. So if that's not a testament to how intelligent he is.
Right.
And me on the other side of the coin was totally about like, man, I could finish this and I could totally go get the guy who lives down the hall from me to go buy me some beer and then I can party tonight. Let's just get this over with. And it was so funny how two complete opposites became such good friends and continue to be to this day.
Maybe he lived that raucous life through you.
Yeah.
As the, no implying that you were raucous, but.
Right.
You
know, I was pretty raucous.
You know, compared to him.
Right.
Brilliant. Those were the days, eh?
Oh, best time of my life, really was.
Now, before we go into the next item that you've got with you, I just want to quickly ask you. You say in your bio that you work in an auto parts store?
Yeah, an auto parts store, sure.
Now, what's the most popular part that you sell?
Oh, probably just oil and filters. People doing oil changes, which is something everybody has to do. Outside of that, brakes, rotors, and then exhausts. And this is so funny because I'm not mechanical. I work in an auto parts store. I can't fix anything. So people come in and they're like, yeah, I'm going to put an exhaust on my truck and I'm going to put brakes and rotors. And oh, how do you think? Is that going to work? And I'm like, I have no idea how to even put windshield wipers on. So I'm always fascinated by the broad range of people that come in and get auto parts and are going to go back to their house and do it themselves because I can't do anything like that.
I'm the same.
Yeah, me too.
Although I can put on windshield wipers.
I can't. It's a struggle.
My wife had to show me.
Your wife's had to show you a lot of things. Cooking, washing, coffee making.
She's really good at all this stuff.
And she did make a really good soup tonight.
You know, she could leave it to me and the windshield wipers would be on backwards and the metal would be scraping the windshield.
Right.
I could make food and the kitchen would turn into this ashen.
It's better if she just helps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
We'll leave it there.
I need help, okay?
Now, your next item, Josh.
Yes.
Is your a picture of your two nieces.
Right. And I told you when we were listening to that song, that I had a funny story about my nieces. So,
do tell.
Yeah, so I have two nieces, 3 and a 1-year-old, two beautiful girls. So you go back 4 years ago, and I'm sitting on the couch in my house, and I'm watching a snowboard video on my iPad, and my phone vibrates. And it's from my sister, my twin sister. And it says, I don't know what you think are going to think about this, but you're going to be an uncle. And I kind of pause for a minute and I think to myself, what I'm going to think about it. What's the matter what I think about it? It's obviously happening. And at the time she was engaged and she was like, well, yeah, you know, but I'm a little nervous. And I said, well, that's a perfectly natural reaction. I'm pretty sure every single person upon finding out they are going to be a parent was nervous. It doesn't matter how prepared you are. And I had a quick conversation with her and I said, hey, you know, everybody who has ever been faced with the prospect of being a parent is scared, has some apprehension about it, but you are much more prepared than even our own parents were. You have a good job. You have a great husband, fiance at the time. Both of you are very smart, hardworking. So you're going to handle this. It's going to be fine. And she's like, yeah, you're right. And I'm like, so you're going to call mom, right? And tell her. Yeah. I'm going to call her tonight. Cool. So that night I have dinner at my parents' house and the phone rings. My mom picks it up and she's like, oh, it's your sister. So I kind of do this move where I lean back in my chair a little bit. I'm like, all right, here it goes. They're going to ask me if I knew about this. I'm ready. And this is what the conversation here. Yep. We're just having dinner. Yeah. Your brother's here. No, kind of cold out. Weather's warm there. She lives in Arizona. All right. Yep. Good night. Bye. And I'm just kind of look. And I'm like, she didn't say anything. So dinner's over. I text my sister. You didn't tell mom. She's like, oh, I was too nervous. I didn't think it was the right time. I gave her the same pep talk again. You got this. Don't worry about it. All right. Well, I'm going to call her and tell her tomorrow. Day goes by. Next day goes by. Weeks go by. I kind of made it up in my head. I must have imagined the whole thing. My sister hasn't mentioned it. I talk to my sister fairly regularly. And it was only about 2 weeks before my mom was going to go down and visit her that somebody came up to my dad and said, hey, heard you're going to be a grandpa. And my dad's natural reaction was, damn it, Josh, what did you do?
Oh, no.
You know? But it turns out that finally they called my sister and were like, is there something you're not telling us? And then my sister told him, and then they came to me and they were like, Josh, did you have any idea about this? And I was like, me?
Yeah, why did you know we?
Oh, and I had to admit it, but it's so funny. So fast forward nearly 4 years now, and she has now two beautiful daughters. She was a little more forthcoming about the second one than she was about the first. But they have just been a blessing in her life and a blessing in my life. And I don't know if I'm ever going to have kids of my own. I don't have any kids of my own. But not that I know of, but sorry, it's a family show. Mm-hmm. But it's just been incredibly grounding to have those little kids in my life, and it's you know, whenever I'm feeling down.
What's their names?
Emery is the oldest; she's three, and the second one, the youngest, is Paige,
right?
Who we affectionately call, because this is what Emery calls her, Bumble. For whatever reason, calls her Bumble. Where's Bumble? So we call her Bumble.
Now, the pictures you'd be taking with you, what kind of pictures? Would it be cheeky wee faces or would it be portraits?
Oh, there's this great picture I just got of them a couple days ago of them. They're kind of back against this fence and they're holding each other's hands smiling.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, the big sister is looking down the little sister and they're looking up at each other. And I'm just like, it's such a... such a warm, fuzzy feeling.
You know, my brother sends me pictures every, you know, like out the blue, you know, like maybe once every week or so, he'll send me a picture of my nephew who's maybe 6 months old now. He was born in April, in March, April. And my niece, and he'll just all of a sudden send me a picture, you know, and maybe I'm having a crappy day at work or something.
Right.
And I'll get this Viber message and it'll be a picture of my niece and I'll just bust out laughing, you know, at the picture, and it just brightens up your day, you know, and then I'll just maybe put that as my front page of my phone.
Right.
So I love getting those pictures, actually. It's great.
And the best feeling I've had is, you know, they turn three and they just start talking, and when she starts calling me Uncle Josh, best feeling in the world. It feels like I hit the lottery when she first called me Uncle Josh.
Yeah.
It's just, and she still calls me Uncle Josh, and I love it.
Yeah,
I love it.
Oh, that's great.
My brother sent me a picture last weekend, and it was a picture of my niece standing outside this little caravan, and it just the caption underneath it was, "We threw Winnie out." She's just standing there, and I just burst out laughing. You know, it was like, that's great.
That's great.
So, you know, I was since you were bringing a photograph, I did a little bit of research on that. And the world's first photograph was by a French scientist, Joseph Nietzschefor Niepce. And it was the view from the window at La Grasse. It was his window. It was the window of his country home in 1839. And that was the first photograph. I was interested...
I think we talked about that years ago.
Probably, yeah. We talked about the history.
I think we talked about it with Jess Puglisi.
Oh, okay, yeah.
yeah, I don't know anything about it now, but yeah.
It's fascinating, like, but it took centuries of... people knew that you could get like a camera obscura. You could have a dark box or room with a pinhole light and... the light coming in would project an image on a wall.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So we knew that we could do that. And people knew that you could take a plate and put chemicals on it and light would make it react.
Yeah.
But it took centuries for people to be like, well, if I take the camera obscura and the plate with the chemicals and put it together, I can preserve an image.
Have you ever been in a dark room?
Yes.
I never have.
Yes.
It's fascinating, isn't it?
It's
you
great.
Know, you take a photograph and then you put this paper in these chemicals and you see that image just slowly coming to life.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
It is. I did a... I was in the photography club in high school and I spent a lot of time in the dark room. And
oh, yes. Do tell.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's with old Miss Lynch there, 76 years old at the time. That was real. No. But it was fascinating, and when you have to crack open the canister of film, and you have to do it in complete darkness, and you're doing it by feel, and you have to load it up, and
oh, yeah.
any light exposed can ruin the whole roll.
Yep.
Did Miss Lynch have you under her thumb?
Yes, she did.
Was it a negative experience?
Oh, a positive one. I know what you're... pun intended.
Yeah. But, you know, under your my thumb is your next song.
Yes.
By the Rolling Stones. Why that song?
Well, I personally see some parallels between that and the Steve Winwood song, because it's very much about getting your due in a good way. And if you listen to the lyrics of that song, it's very much Mick Jagger talking about that girl that was once making life a little hard for me
yeah.
is now under my spell. And I don't know what it is about me and songs of redemption. Maybe it's because I feel like I've had some struggles in my life, but it's something about the idea of, hey, this was once something. It doesn't necessarily have to be a girl, but this is once something that gave me a challenge. And now I got it. I got control.
Yeah.
And this is me celebrating it. And you just feel, when you think about the definition of, I hate this word, but when you think about the definition of swag, you think about Mick Jagger and you think about the control he has on that song and the rhythm and just the confidence that's just spewing out of him. I love it. And this is maybe a little fanciful of me, but sometimes I think, like, wouldn't it be great to just have that feeling one day, like, under my thumb, this thing or this girl or this person or this problem I had is under my control now.
Yeah.
And to just kind of, it's a celebration song. I think it is.
It depends. Some people can get a little overzealous with such confidence, like gunman Meredith Hunter, who was...
Was that a Remington 308?
Yeah, what kind of gun was it? Let's talk about it.
He was stabbed to death by the Hell's Angels security squad at the 1969 Altamont Free concert that the Rolling Stones were given.
That's yeah. right, yeah.
So they were playing this song.
Yeah, the Hells Angels were the security guard for the concert.
How does that happen? Like, all right, we need some security guards. Who do we get? Oh, those Hells Angels are pretty bad. You know?
Nobody messes with them.
Dude, was there like a contract? Who do you contact about that? Who do you call up and like, excuse me, is this the Hells Angels?
Imagine it's very nefarious circumstances in which that contract is written.
Yeah. I actually think that the person had been shot before the gig. Now, I might be wrong with this. I've actually saw footage of the actual gig. It looked chaotic. And I think they went on, because if they didn't go on, a riot may have broke out and things could have got worse.
Jeez.
So they end up playing under duress, knowing that somebody had been shot.
Yes.
What the what?
So that's character building.
Wow.
One.
You're listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXC Acra 90.7 FM. That was Under My Thumb by the Rolling Stones. Today we have Josh Frommer talking about a variety of items and songs that he would take on his Catskill Cabin getaway. Josh, your next item is a composition notebook.
Yes.
You like to write?
I do. I was just noted to somebody last night who was at my apartment, and they noticed that I have a kitchen table, much like the one we're sitting at now, covered with, has my laptop, and it's surrounded by just notebooks. And for as long as I can remember, I've always had a notebook next to me that I just scribble things in. I'm not somebody who makes lists. I'm not somebody who's very organized, but I've always been somebody who just scribbles notes down whenever I think of something.
Yeah.
And yeah, and actually the past couple of years, it's become amplified where I always have a composition notebook on me to write ideas down for, you know, I'm involved in so many different projects that
right.
I just write it out. So if I were to be in a cabin in the woods, I'd have to have one of those with me. Absolutely.
Do you have any aspirations to one day write a book or maybe a history novel?
Yeah, I sometimes think that I would really like to sit down and write a full book. I've always enjoyed writing. I've always enjoyed putting my thoughts to paper. It's something I've worked very hard at. Whether or not I'll ever have the attention span to sit down and write, you know, a 200 or 300 page book, I don't know, but I would like to ultimately do something like that.
Right.
If you were to write about history, is there an era that you really enjoy reading about, writing about?
Oh, man.
Or people?
Man, people, place, things. What's my favorite era? You know, I think one of the most kind of overlooked periods of the modern century, or this happened in the last 100 years, is the Korean War.
Yeah.
And right. I think there's so many stories about that. And when you look at epic movies made, it's either World War II, you kind of move through cinema, and it's Vietnam.
Yeah.
And I always feel like Korea was a very bloody war, a very intense war. And I had an uncle that fought in both Korea and Vietnam. And I always think it's just one of those things people always asked him, hey, how was Vietnam like? Nobody ever asked about Korea. And even when I went to school for history, we barely touched on it in any of my classes. So yeah. I think I would like to revisit and explore that.
Right.
Yeah. It is kind of a forgotten war somehow.
Yeah.
But it's still going on. Really.
Yeah.
You know, they have the armistice, the ceasefire. But, you know, that could...
Yeah, the North Korea at the moment are stirring things up.
Yeah.
Whether it's to goad people or not, who knows? But it's interesting how that could develop.
Right.
You know? Hopefully it doesn't develop.
Yeah.
But, you know,
cool.
It's one to keep an eye on, obviously.
Let's have some cooler heads prevailing.
Yeah.
If only... Everyone had a teddy bear to squeeze once in a while.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, when you're staring down the gun barrel into nuclear war, just reach over, squeeze your teddy bear, and think, you know, life's not so bad. Let's put the cover back over that button. And
absolutely.
And, well, you're not bringing any drinks or anything, but I was going to say have a drink, like a coffee.
Oh, yeah, but, I should have brought something to hydrate myself with.
But why a teddy bear?
Oh, why a teddy bear? Well, it's something I had... for years. I still technically have it, though it's in a closet in my parents' house.
Does the teddy bear have a name?
Teddy.
Teddy.
Nice. I didn't get really creative with the name. I thought I was very original back then, but apparently right. Everybody had a teddy bear named Teddy.
It works.
Right. Yeah. And it was just something I slept with in my bed for my youth, you know, when I was 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old. I just 10, had it in
11,
my bed.
12, 13, 14.
Yeah, probably much longer than I should have. But I have a memory of this one time. My parents had a yard sale, and I go out to see the yard sale, and there's my teddy bear in the yard sale for $2. And I said, Mom, what the heck? And she's like, you're too old for that. And I said, no, I am most certainly not. And I pulled it back away, and I took it back. And it's just, you know, when you ask me to pick things from different items of my life, different moments of my life, I thought that was, you know, a tangible possession that I really have good memories of just having. And I think it's something people do where you, what's the word? Anthropomorphize inanimate objects when you're young. And
right.
I just have fond memories of doing that. And
so teddy means something to you.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's a connection to my youth. It's a connection to my childhood. And I think as I move through adulthood, I'm 32 now, I still find it's important to remember that you're not far removed from a kid. You can't take yourself too seriously.
Yeah. What did you think of the movie Ted?
Oh, I thought it was hilarious.
Have you seen Ted 2?
Yes. I just watched it a couple weeks ago, and that Tom Brady scene was hilarious.
Oh, I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, my God. The Tom Brady scene.
Didn't see it.
Where they try to... I'm not going to go and tell you what they're trying to do.
Spoiler alert.
There's a scene with Tom Brady in it, and it is just hilarious. One of the finest pieces of cinema I've ever seen.
So would it freak you out if you were sitting in the cabin and all of a sudden Teddy went, "Hey, Josh, how about a drink?"
Yeah, I'd probably, poor Teddy, I'd probably grab that 308 real quick. And
Ted is just one of the films that the teddy bear has made an appearance in. Winnie the Pooh, Paddington Bear, all films and cartoons and things that bears have been brought into since they were first created in November. No, that's not when they were created, November 19. Teddy Roosevelt went bear hunting in Mississippi in November of 1902 and hadn't caught anything. He was with a bunch of guys, and he's, the president, and some other attendants chased down and captured a bear, tied it to a tree, and they brought the president over and said, you haven't gotten one. Here's one for you to shoot. And he refused, saying that unsportsmanlike. And this started the whole teddy bear fad. A gentleman named Morris Mictum saw a political cartoon that was drawn, kind of caricaturing the event. And he's like, "Hey, I could make little bears and sell them. That'd be great." And he actually sent one to Teddy Roosevelt and got permission from Roosevelt to use the name Teddy in the advertising and naming of the bears. Wow. Coincidentally, in Germany, a gentleman also made and started to sell stuffed bears.
Steiff.
It was Steiff.
Ha ha.
Yeah, well done.
Yeah.
How do you know that?
Well, when I went to Glasgow University, George, my friend George, who does the music for the show, he just returned to Glasgow, having stayed in Switzerland. And my brother's friend owned a teddy bear antique store. And George used to sit in from time to time while he was away sourcing teddy bears. So I used to go in and make my lunch every now and again and sit with George in the teddy bear antique store. And we would look at all the teddy bears. And it's like a lot of Steiff teddy bears, and Steiff are like worth a lot of money.
Yeah.
Wow.
Obviously the older they are, the more expensive, the more rare they are, the more expensive they are. But that's the main name, Steiff bears.
Oh, okay.
So that's how I know about it.
And this was in toy stores?
This was in a small antique store.
Just
in a kind of middle class part of Glasgow.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, if you were in a toy store, you might have seen some shiny toy guns.
Yes.
Which is the name of the band that wrote Burning For You, which is Josh's last song.
Well, you're on form tonight, Mike.
Well,
Burning For You is a cover song of Blue Oyster Cult.
Ah, see.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And it now appears on a Lincoln MKS commercial.
Yes.
I guess. Sung by Buck Dharma from Blue Oyster Cult.
Buck Dharma.
So why this song? Why finish up with this?
I discovered Shiny Toy Guns a couple years ago, and I had been familiar with the Blue Oyster Cult, and I heard this song in a snowboard movie, and I said, man, I don't know what it is with me and cover songs, but I love cover songs. And I heard this one, and you can hear the lyrics actually a lot clearer in this song than you can in the original. In that line, what is it? Home in the city, home in the highway. And you just kind of picture a changing of scenery.
Right.
And, it ain't no home to me, or it ain't no home for me. And I'm just like, at the time when I heard this, I was living in Vermont, and I was traveling back and forth between where I was living in Burlington and home a lot. And I used to think, yeah, home in the city, Burlington, Vermont, home on the highway. I'm on the highway a lot. And I just loved it. And that whole thing, I'm burning for you. I think it's just a triumphant song. And it's something we talked about, how I was a snowboard coach. And when I go snowboarding, once in a while, I'll put headphones in. And this is probably my favorite song to snowboard to.
Burning for you.
that was Burning For You, Shiny Toy Guns. Now, Josh, we never asked you about the Hunter Foundation.
Sure.
What's your role there? What do you do? And what does the foundation do?
Sure. Well, I am on the board of directors for this foundation. And what the Hunter Foundation does is we use grant money and other resources to buy blighted properties in the town of Hunter.
Okay.
Old businesses that aren't inhabited anymore. And we look for prospective business owners that would like to set up shop in Tannersville.
Right.
We restore the building, bring it up to a certain level of modernity, modern amenities, put a lot of money into it. Then we lease it to them for a really cheap deal just to get them started. We'll do a lot of things to bring them into the community. And as a result, we bring businesses in. We turn buildings that were empty into productive businesses. And we make the town look better for both residents and tourists. And it just doesn't extend to businesses. We've done housing grants. One of our most recent projects is we've helped secure a grant for the village to revitalize the local Rip Van Winkle Lake area in town, the park. So we're involved in a lot of different things. And I'm on the, like I said, I'm on the board of directors. I have been for about a year. Because I'm kind of a junior member, I don't have much say in what we do. Primarily what I do is similar to what I'm doing now, where I've been on the radio a couple times, the local RIP 97 station, and just to promote the projects we have on and give awareness to what we're doing.
Right.
Because public relations, when you're working in a small town, it's important that people right. understand and appreciate what you do.
Right.
Because yeah. if you don't control the information, people kind of misinterpret it. And they don't, they're like, oh, all you guys do is just throw money and give people opportunities that don't deserve it. No, we're doing stuff that otherwise would just be a vacant building.
Sure.
Right. Now, sure. Do you, is there any buildings that you would love to save and resurrect, but you can't because they're maybe privately owned or whatever? Is it, what, how do you acquire a building? Do you go to the person who owns it and mm-hmm. say, we'll buy this off you?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And that's basically how it happens. I don't, you know, there's certain things that are kind of put in place. But if we see a building in Tannersville, primarily one that's on Main Street or one that's in public view, that we feel that we could turn into a business or that would be attractive to us, we could very well make an offer and say, hey, we have a vision for this. And we have a couple properties that we're kind of waiting on to develop, but it happens very quickly. And if you could go back 10, 15 years and see what Tannersville looked like and compare it to now with the vibrant colors, the flourishing businesses,
yeah.
the Hunter Foundation, and this isn't just me waxing poetic because I'm on the board. This is, I was a fan before I was a member. It's been incredible. And right. I think we serve as a model for real, what a real charitable foundation should do, because what we do is far beyond typical altruism. It's just not, hey, here's some money, this is a good cause, we're just going to throw money at it. No, it's given with a purpose. We have a vision and it's to benefit the entire mountaintop. So it's, for me, it's great being, it's really given my life purpose and it feels
that's
good.
That's fantastic.
Because
yeah. what you're doing is you're trying, you know, you live in the area.
Right.
You love the area. So you want to see the area look good. You want to drive by the area. You want, you know, your family and friends and say, hey, this is where I live. Doesn't yeah. this look great?
Right.
And you're part of helping that
right.
get better.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
and you know, and you can really, that's fantastic.
And, so. And it does kind of stroke the ego a little bit because sometimes people are like, oh, these buildings are looking great. And even though it's not quite me as a board member, I'm sometimes like, yeah, you know, this was me.
Well, yeah, it really is.
But it is a great thing to feel good about.
Yeah.
It's because you really are helping people. And all you have to do is tour around other villages in upstate New York and in the Northeast and in the Midwest and see what towns would look like without this type of contribution.
Sure.
Yeah.
You really oh, yeah. value it much more. Yeah. It's awesome.
That's fantastic. It really is, isn't it?
Yeah.
And long may it continue, man.
Yeah.
So on behalf of the people who stay there and have stayed there, thank you for doing
yeah,
that.
Yeah, thank you. Oh.
Now, before we go, because we're running out of time here.
Yes.
We have one question we would like to ask you.
Sure.
And that question is, Mike?
Josh, how do you take your coffee?
Me? Half and half with one scoop of sugar.
And what type of coffee do you drink?
I like dark roast. What I do is when I prepare my coffee at my house, I put enough coffee in the filter for about 4 cups of coffee and enough water for one.
Nice.
And I like when you pour it out to just you can almost tip the pot upside down and have to hit the top.
This guy knows his coffee. Yeah, mate.
I like jet fuel. If I'm gonna drink coffee, I'm gonna, you know, it's maybe a testament to how I live my life. If I'm gonna do something, I'm gonna do it all in. And when people say, "Oh, I drink coffee," I'm like, "No, listen, I drink coffee. It's a meal."
I find that quite strange because when we played poker together all those years ago in Tannersville, you very rarely went all in.
Yeah.
So yeah. That's a bit of an oxymoron.
Well, you know, like, kind of goes back to the Hunter Foundation. If you're going to do something, it has to be done a little tactile and with purpose. And I drink coffee because there's a purpose behind it. And if I'm not going to go all in, it's because I'm working towards a certain goal there that going all in wouldn't help me achieve. Yeah. There's science behind everything I do. At least that's how I rationalize it.
Well, if we were sitting about drinking coffee, talking about it, we'd be in good company because I love mine strong as well.
Very good.
Thank you very much for being on the show, Josh.
Oh, the pleasure was all mine.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate it.
Hi, I'm Josh Frommer, and you've been listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXC Accra, 90.7 FM. Special thanks to George, Gordon, and Billy from the band White for the theme music, and to everybody at WGXC. Thank you.